Tehran slams as irresponsible the remarks by European Union officials about Tehran's role in the attack on an Israeli-owned tanker. Former Afghan President Hamid Karzai explains why he rejected the U.S. proposal of bilateral security agreements while in office. And a report by the U.N.'s climate panel warns that global warming is on the verge of getting out of control and that humans are indisputably to blame. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Muse. Thanks for joining us. Iran has slammed the remarks by the European Union officials on the recent attack against an Israeli-owned tanker as irresponsible.
The remarks by the British Foreign Secretary against the Iranian nation are nothing new, and they are only a sample of the many irresponsible remarks that have been made in the past years by British officials. I seriously recommend the UK government to pay attention to its duties and responsibilities, and they should know that the security of the Persian Gulf is a red line for Iran.
Foreign Ministry spokesman Saeed Khatibzadeh rejected the accusations as baseless, saying that blaming Iran is a scenario planned by the Israeli regime. He said the comments by EU officials do not contribute to the peace and stability of the region. Khatibzadeh noted that Tehran is committed to ensuring the security of the strategic Persian Gulf waterway and the Strait of Hormuz. The reaction comes after the G7 foreign ministers and the EU foreign policy chief, Joseph Borrell, claimed that Iran was involved in last week's attack on an Israeli-managed vessel off the coast of Oman. Tel Aviv said that it is ready to strike Iran in retaliation for the attack. Iran has already warned of a crushing response to any such move. Former Afghan President Hamid Karzai explains why he rejected the U.S. proposal of bilateral security agreements while in office.
I refused because I was clear in my mind with evidence that without first having peace in Afghanistan, without guaranteeing peace in Afghanistan, without guaranteeing a dignified relationship with Pakistan based on the interest of both countries, and without making sure that the BSA will certainly be effective for peace in Afghanistan, signing that agreement would be detrimental to Afghan peace, that the foreign forces would be staying safely in their bases and Afghans would be dying. And unfortunately, that's what happened. So I'm glad I didn't sign that, and I was very determined not to sign.
Karzai said the U.S. military activities in Afghanistan, in the name of fighting the Taliban, caused immense suffering to Afghan civilians, including women and children. He said that civilian homes and families were bombed and destroyed for no reason. The former president said that he gave his full backing to the U.S. initiative for peace in order to end the war on the country. But he said that such a process did not give the desired results, rather caused more suffering to Afghans. Elsewhere in his remarks, Karzai defended calling the Taliban brothers, despite the group never welcoming his peace proposal.
Yes, I did call them brothers, and for two reasons. One reason was that they belonged to our country. They were our countrymen, and countrymen are brothers. The other reason was that the U.S. Military activity in Afghanistan, in the name of fighting the Taliban, was causing immense suffering to the Afghan civilians and Afghan people.
Karzai, however, urged the Taliban to end attacking villages and towns that belong to their own countrymen. He warned that such attacks serve the interests of foreign powers and could lead to internal uprisings against the militant group itself. The former president called on global and regional powers, including Russia, China, Iran, and Pakistan, to join hands with the Afghan people to bring a lasting peace to the country. The Taliban have overrun the northern city of Aibak, the sixth provincial capital seized by the militants in a matter of days. Now, the deputy governor of Samangan province confirmed the militants are in full control of the city. This came shortly after a Taliban spokesman tweeted that all government and police installations were captured. Meanwhile, Afghan commandos launched a counterattack to push back the militants from the northern city of Kunduz, which they overran one day earlier. Heavy fighting is also underway near the western city of Herat. According to the United Nations Children's Agency, the conflict has killed at least 27 Afghan children, injuring 136 more over the past 3 days. The correspondent in Kabul, Amin Alami, has given us more details on the Taliban's capturing of a sixth provincial capital in Afghanistan.
This was the sixth provincial capital that came under the control of Taliban. over the past 4 days. Afghan military sources say that over the past 6 and even 7 days, the Taliban militants have suffered heavy casualties, but they did not stop their rising assaults on provincial capitals to take control over these areas. But facts on the ground show that at least 2 out of these 6 provincial capitals came under the control of the Taliban militants without any fighting or without any resistance by Afghan military forces. Zaranj in southwest of Afghanistan was the first city that was collapsed into the hands of Taliban without any fighting, and now, according to local sources in Aibak, the capital of northern Samangan province, the Taliban militants entered the city while Afghan security forces have retreated without any fighting. Reports from northeastern Badakhshan province of Afghanistan also suggest that hundreds of Taliban militants have launched a heavy-scale attack on Faizabad, the capital of Badakhshan province and northeast of Afghanistan. But the top commanders there, and who are they leading, the elite Afghan soldiers, saying that Afghan military force, especially the Afghan commander troops, have pushed back the Taliban attacks.
The UN's climate panel says global warming is on the verge of getting out of control, and that humans are indisputably to blame. The landmark report warned that greenhouse gas levels in the atmosphere are already high enough to cause climate disruption for decades, if not centuries. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change also warned that the world must brace for heat waves, droughts, hurricanes, and other weather extremes, unprecedented in the observational record. The IPCC called for sharp, rapid, and sustainable reduction in greenhouse gas emissions. It predicted that the world is likely to exceed the warming limit of 1.5 degrees Celsius around 2030, without immediate reduction in greenhouse gas emissions.
What is clear from this report is that unless there are immediate, strong, rapid, and large-scale reductions in greenhouse gas emissions, limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius, will be beyond reach. A report shows that in the next 20 years, global warming, the average temperature at the Earth's surface over a period of 20 years, is expected to reach or exceed 1.5 degrees Celsius above the late 1800s.
The IPCC said human activities account for almost all of the global warming since the mid-19th century. The UN chief described the report as a code red for humanity. Antonio Guterres said the report must sound a death knell for coal and fossil fuels. The UK premier also expressed hope that the report would be a wake-up call for the world to take action to tackle climate change. Also, Germany's environment minister urged the international community to ramp up efforts to cope with the impact of climate change. According to US-based research institute Rhodium Group, China, the United States, India, and the European Union account for over 50% of the world's carbon emissions. European Union countries boost their aid to Greece, which has been battling wildfires for the 7th consecutive day. The European Commission says 9 planes, 1,000 firefighters, and 200 vehicles have been deployed to Greece. Wildfires have erupted in many parts of the country amid a heat wave unprecedented in more than 30 years. The fires have devoured thousands of hectares of forest and caused mass evacuations on the island of Evia. Strong winds and high temperatures have made it harder for firefighters to contain the flames. The Greek Prime Minister has called it a nightmarish summer, saying the government's top priority is to protect human lives. Iran's new president says that his country's interests should be secured in any negotiation on the 2015 nuclear deal, also known as the JCPOA. Ebrahim Raisi made the comments in a phone call with his French counterpart. Raisi said the U.S. has repeatedly violated its obligations under the accord by imposing new sanctions on Iran. He noted that Washington has even expanded the bans to affect humanitarian supplies. The Iranian president also criticized the European for following in U.S. tracks. Raisi stressed that Iran's rights under the deal must be fully restored, and both the U.S. and the Europeans should return to their relevant obligations. Emmanuel Macron, for his part, said that Paris is seeking a solution for the current situation, calling for the resumption of JCPOA revival talks in Vienna. August 9, 2021 marks the fourth anniversary of the killing of Mohsen Hojaji, a young member of Iran's Revolutionary Guards Corps, who was beheaded by Daesh terrorists in Syria. Hojaji's name has become synonymous with bravery and struggle against savage terrorism. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution had said that he is the evidence of numerous young people willing to fight for Islam.
Iraq and Syria have been struggling with poverty and instability for years. The U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2003 and Washington and its allies' support for opposition groups and al-Qaeda affiliates in Syria, as well as crippling economic sanctions, merely added fuel to the fire of instability there and gave birth to Daesh. Since Daesh terrorists emerged in Iraq and Syria, Iran has been providing advisory assistance to the two countries' armies in their fight against the terrorists. On August 7, 2017, Daesh terrorists captured a member of an Iranian advisory support team in Syria near the Tanf border crossing in the southeast of the country. 2 days later, on August 9, Mohsen Hojaji was beheaded by the Takfiri terrorists. The terrorist group published photos and videos of Hojaji's arrest and beheading. The act prompted widespread condemnation of the terrorist group, as well as the admiration of the soldiers who were fighting against it. In a meeting with the family of Hojaji, leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, hailed Hojaji as an emblem of sincere and courageous martyrdom and called the Takfiri groups puppets of the United States and Britain. Also, late Iranian commander of the Quds Force of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, Qasem Soleimani, slammed the incident as a horrific, inhumane crime that came in the wake of successive blows dealt on several fronts to Takfiri Wahhabi terrorist groups, which are linked to the world's imperialist power. He vowed not to rest until they have taken out every last terrorist from the face of the Muslim world. Iranian General Qasem Soleimani and Iraqi Commander Abu Mehdi al-Muhandis, who played a decisive role in the full-scale fight against the Daesh terrorists, were assassinated in Baghdad airport in January 2020 in a U.S. drone attack.
Since Takfiri terrorists emerged in Iraq and in Syria, Iran has been providing advisory assistance to the two countries' armies in their fight against the terrorists. Now, that is while the U.S. and its allies' military actions in both countries have merely added fuel to the fire of instability, further deepening the socioeconomic crisis. Additionally, there have been reports of the U.S. and its allies backing and supporting some of these terrorist groups that they claim that they are fighting.
2 years after the 9/11 incident, the U.S. invaded Iraq and opened a second major front in its so-called War on Terror after invading Afghanistan. The invasion toppled Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein, but was followed by instability as well as deadly violence that took the lives of over a million Iraqis and displaced over 9 million more. Consequently, the chaos that resulted from the U.S. invasion finally gave birth to Daesh terror group in 2014. Elsewhere in Syria, the government has been grappled with foreign-backed militancy since March 2011, that later gave way to the presence of terrorist groups such as Daesh. Furthermore, over the past years, the U.S. has been leading a military coalition conducting airstrikes against purported targets of the Daesh Takfiri terrorist group inside Syria without any authorization from the Damascus government. However, numerous reports and official accounts have revealed the U.S. and Israel's involvement in the relocation of Daesh's elements across Syria and shipment of supplies to them. The U.S. has also been blamed for stealing and selling Syrian oil and other resources. Add to this list the crippling sanctions against the Damascus government. The U.S. has targeted Baghdad and Damascus with crippling economic sanctions, which have worsened the socio-economic conditions there.
First of all, let's say Iran is supporting all the freedom fighters in the world and fighting against the terrorists. Even, you know, like we call it, either we call it the Hujaja massacre, brutal killing by ISIS, and then al-Nusra later on. As we know that those movements, let's say, or organizations, according to what Hillary Clinton said, this is or they were all created by United States.
Washington is directly responsible for the emergence of Daesh and the current instability and poverty that has afflicted the Iraqi and Syrian nations. Ironically, the U.S. punishes countries that are aiding Baghdad and Damascus to fight attack for terrorists with economic sanctions and calls them terrorists. Aren't the real terrorists those who provide assistance for Daesh and worsen the living conditions of people by imposing economic sanctions on their countries?
Iran has reported 588 new COVID-related fatalities in the span of 24 hours. That is the country's highest daily death toll since the start of the pandemic. The latest deaths pushed Iran's overall death toll to over 94,600. The country's total caseload also jumped to near 4.2 million, after more than 40,800 new infections were registered. Iran has been grappling with a fifth wave of COVID-19 triggered by the Delta variant over the past weeks. Authorities have sped up a vaccination program to contain the surge. They have also imposed restrictions in cities declared high-risk red zones. Currently, more than 330 cities are classified as red zones. COVID-19 is raging on across Asia and the Pacific region, prompting governments to consider more stringent measures to curb the spread of the virus. In Indonesia, health officials reported over 20,000 new daily cases and more than 1,400 new deaths. The country has the worst coronavirus outbreak in Southeast Asia, with over 108,000 fatalities. The Indonesian government is set to discuss toughening coronavirus restrictions as cases are surging across the country. In Australia, lockdowns have been expanded in New South Wales. Authorities in the country's most populous state are concerned over the spread of the Delta variant from Sydney. Fears over the spread of the highly infectious strain come despite a 7-week lockdown in Sydney. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
The illegal Zionist entity will definitely vanish from the world map, and judging from its recent suicidal attempts in southern Lebanon, coupled with the suicidal remarks of Premier Naftali Bennett and War Minister Benny Gantz, it will be the most horrible end that any criminal regime has ever met in history. It is only a matter of time for the fake regime of Israel to cease its illegal existence on the soil of Palestine. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by the staff of Keihan International. This article is published under the heading Zionist regimes, suicidal moves. Stay tuned, please, for the details of this article. It seems the grave is ready, and the corpse, on life support for the past several decades, tired of its precarious survival, is yearning for burial, or more properly, cremation, since the fast approaching end is likely to be the combustible, which means no need for any undertakers. Yes, the illegal Zionist entity called Israel will definitely vanish from the world map, and judging from its recent suicidal attempts in southern Lebanon, coupled with the suicidal remarks of Premier Naftali Bennett and War Minister Benny Gantz, it will be the most horrible end that any criminal regime has ever met in history. Emboldened by its almost daily brutalities against the unarmed residents of Beit al-Muqaddas, its frequent battering of the defenseless stone-throwing people of the West Bank, and its sporadic air raids on the besieged Gaza enclave, where the retaliatory rockets of defenders have not yet acquired the power to thoroughly pummel the occupiers, the Zionist entity, earlier this week, made the folly to test the patience of Lebanon's legendary anti-terrorist movement, the Hezbollah. The response was swift. Around 20 short-range projectiles were fired as warning shots by the Lebanese defenders, who could well have destroyed the enemy military base on the occupied Sheba farms, but chose to target the nearby uninhabited areas as warning shots. The harebrained Israelis, however, again miscalculated by firing artillery shells at a time when, with the backing of their godfathers in Washington and London, they intend to provoke the Islamic Republic of Iran by thundering threats. Their reply from Tehran was to the point. General Hossein Salami, the chief of the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, IRGC, said, "We are all prepared for the showdown." Other senior commanders have also warned the Zionists against playing with fire in the Persian Gulf and the Gulf of Oman region by blaming Iran for supposed attacks on commercial shipping. IRGC head of the Aerospace Division, Brigadier General Amir Ali Hajizadeh, made it clear. "The enemies have tested us before and know what response they will face. We have both the power and the will to exercise power. We will certainly deliver a harsh response, and they cannot make such a mistake. Let us wait and see how the Zionist entity and its criminal backers behave. One wrong move, and without the least doubt, the Zionist regime will be a thing of the past." Meanwhile, the resistance front, stretching from Palestine to Syria and from Iraq to Yemen, which lauded Lebanon's Hezbollah for its retaliatory steps, has issued separate statements to warn the Zionist entity of their collective power that is capable of liberating not just the Sheba farms and the Golan Heights, but all of Beit al-Muqaddas. Yes, it is only a matter of time for the fake regime of Israel to cease its illegal existence on the soil of Palestine.
first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we invite you to listen to a speech by Sheikh Hamza Sodagian.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Muharram is approaching. Community centers that are not Muslim, that are Christian, they are worried about, at least the way we see it, I can't say this with full certainty, but I'm not going to accuse all these Christian institutions to be holding these programs for material reasons. There's at least partially, some of it is their belief in their religion. They're finding ways that are approved of to hold in-person programs. Muslim institutions, I'm not seeing as much of an effort. And then what's happening? Arguments are put forth about why this should not happen. Just cut everything out. Max have something online. A person goes there in front of the camera, or even not there, but stay at home from the camera, do something, and then arguments are put forth to try to suggest that it's very wrong to hold programs. When you especially put some of these labels on it, oh, you're putting people's lives in danger. What if somebody, especially the elderly in the community, die? What if this, and so on and so forth? And then it pushes people who think that, look, we need to have these programs. Everybody goes to take care of their material necessities. Islam says these programs, congregational prayers, even Muharram, these are necessities. It's not wajib for this specific person or that specific person to go to this program or the other. That's why it's considered mustahab. However, upholding the program in the community is wajib. This is called wujub kifa'i. It's not wajib for every individual to attend this gathering or that gathering. Mujtahideen have said it regarding the ziyarah of Abu Abdullah al-Husayn. They've said it in regards to upholding Hajj itself. Okay. Again, not necessarily for this person who is mustati' or the other. If you have a bunch of mustati' people that have already been, they've already gone to Hajj, so it's not wajib on any of them. Nobody else can attend. Is it okay to leave Masjidul Haram, the Kaaba, empty, vacant, nobody's there? Arafat is empty, Mina is empty, Mash'ar is empty, nobody, not even one person. Is it allowed for us to do that? We have already gone. Others who haven't gone, they are not here. Hypothetically, this is a hypothetical situation. Is it okay not to perform Hajj? Nobody this year performs Hajj. No, Hajj must take place. Ziyarah of the Ahlul Bayt, particularly Ziyarah of Abu Abdullah al-Husayn. It's mustahab. It's not wajib for you or the other to necessarily go. We don't have a ruling like that. But ziyarah of Imam al-Husayn, there is a wujub for it, kifai. There must be people there. People have to go for ziyarah. This has been said. There are plenty of explanations. Maraja have mentioned, Ayatollah Khamenei, who is a marja, who is a wali al-faqih, he said the organization, the committee that deals with decisions regarding coronavirus, everybody needs to uphold them. All the mu'mineen, it's a necessity, you need to do that. However, that committee needs to understand the programs for Laylatul Qadr, the programs for commemorating the Ahlul Bayt, the programs of munajat, of dua, these are necessities that must happen with that product. The same way you think Home Depot is a necessity, the same way that you authorities think that grocery stores are necessities, the same way that you think these other businesses, occupations are necessities. I don't even want to talk about restaurants. That if you think these are necessities of life that need to be open, we can't shut them down. Know that Islamically, this marja, waliyul faqih, says these activities are necessities. If they are necessities, the ones making decisions need to make those decisions with this thought process. You don't shut down grocery stores, hospitals, doctors don't come. Why? Because you could just save a life. Well, doctors need to go there to save lives. Grocery stores need to be open to save lives. You can't shut that down. Businesses generally need to be open. The extreme measure that shut everything down, well, what are you going to do with homeless people now? People are going from paycheck to paycheck. You save their material life, but they're going to be, God knows, they don't have access to funds, no loans, no credits, no nothing, paycheck to paycheck. All the businesses and workers shut down. Now 5 people are going to be on the verge of dying because of the decision you made. Who says this is the right decision? Islamic activities are necessities. With the understanding that these are necessities that God has made necessary for us, necessary activities, just tell us, okay, if we are going to hold it, how are we going to make sure that we take precaution so that we reduce the risk? And the other thing is, it's clear, you can't eliminate the risk. Whoever thinks this uneducated discussion of saving lives, no, you cannot save lives with these measures. It's not up to us to save that life from a divine perspective. God gives life and He takes life. From a material scientific perspective, those who took all the necessary measures that given to them, except for necessities, they did not leave. They quarantined for a whole month, for 3 months, in fact. Left only in necessary occasions, for necessary reasons, took every single measure, social distancing, 2-3 masks perhaps, sanitize everything before and after, don't touch your face, no eye touching, nothing. They got the virus. It's there. I'm sure you have access to social media, TikTok, Facebook, whatever you like, Instagram. People who took all these measures, they got the virus. You reduce the risk. That's our job. Reducing the risk. Okay, what are the measures? We, inshallah, we are holding. Outdoor programs are going to be held with the guidelines that are there. Inshallah, we encourage all centers to do this. In all countries, hold outdoor programs. Go with the guidelines, facial coverings, masks, whatever you like to call it. Social distancing, household social distancing, whatever way you... But have programs for Abu Abdullah al-Hussein. It's a necessity. You can't shut it down and just have online programs and just do latam at home or matam at home, sinazani, whatever you call it in your language. We can't do that. If it's possible to have something more than that, to reduce it based on arguments that are baseless, we're not allowed to do that. We're going to miss out. And then, again, the other thing is, there's a time where, like, we're going to be doing this, and then others say, we're not going to be, this is our judgment. We encourage, we say, this is how we see it, for these reasons, talk to people, experts, authorities, and you'll see, there's nothing, not only, there's nothing wrong with it, number one, there's everything right with it, number two, for these reasons that we stated, sort of, both of them. But if an organization decides, okay, you know what, that's not how we, okay, they do their... But then people start attacking and saying, you shouldn't be doing this. You're going to cause deaths in the community. You're going to cause this, that, the other. What happens here? People start wondering, okay, oh my God, should we do this? Should we not do this? It was clear, and it's still, the evidence is there. But then we think, what if one person dies that came to the program? One person gets corona that came to the program. They're diagnosed with COVID-19. One person during the Ashura or right after the Ashura. If that happens, and then officials, committee members, presidents, whatever of the community centers and organizations, they all want to hold back. What if this? Didn't you see the facts? Who says this person got it from your program? And even if they did, don't they get it from other places that they go for necessity? The person they got it from here in this session, didn't they get it from a grocery store, from the work that was a necessity for them to get their bills paid and so on and so forth? Why is it that only when it happens here it's a problem? The person who brought it here got it from another source. That's not a problem. We don't condemn them. The person that got it here, that's a problem. On the day of judgment, I will feel very comfortable if Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala asks me, this person, that person died because they came to your Muharram program. Say, Ya Allah, based on the maraja', the waliyul faqih, they said it's necessary. Then they said, the authorities said, you need to protect in these ways. I did both of those. And you said you give life and you take life, even if you hide in fortresses, create bubbles for yourself. You have said in your book that I will take your life. These are the reasons why I did it. If despite all of this, you want to punish me, punish me. I'm that clear. Okay. And we know that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, seeing the truth and holding on to the truth because of its truth, not giving in to reasons that we know are not true simply because there's pressure.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 15:20 to 16:20 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 19:20 to 20:20 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/EN. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Thank you.
in the limelight. Trump-era tariffs on Chinese imports are fueling record U.S. inflation and threaten President Joe Biden's chances at 2022 midterm elections. We now present you an article written by David P. Goldman. The piece is titled U.S. Business Pushes Biden for a China Trade Deal. The article has appeared on the front page of AsiaTimes.com website. Never before in U.S. political history has the whole of the American business community, more than 30 major business organizations, spoke with one voice, as it did in an 5th of August appeal to the Biden administration to eliminate tariffs on imports from China. No entities in American politics are timider than business lobbies, most of whose work involves quiet lobbying for administrative relief and legislative tweaks. Such a high-profile intervention suggests that the business organizations believe that a deal is already underway. A deal is likely because inflation could poison the Democratic Party's chances at 2022 midterm elections and return control of the U.S. Congress to the Republicans. Cutting tariffs is the quickest way to reduce inflation. Beyond the arithmetic of electoral politics, a consensus is emerging that the technology sanctions that Trump imposed on China have failed and may even have backfired. More than 30 business groups, including the Chamber of Commerce, the Business Roundtable, the Semiconductor Industry Association, as well as retailers, farm and manufacturing representatives, asked President Biden to cut tariffs and restart trade talks with China. The letter stated, "A worker-centered trade agenda should account for the cost that U.S. and Chinese tariffs impose on Americans here and at home and remove tariffs that harm U.S. interests." Recently, U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen told the New York Times that tariffs hurt American consumers. Since then, former President Donald Trump imposed a 20% tariff on roughly half the goods America buys from China. The Treasury Department has collected about $100 billion in fees. Most of that was paid by U.S. consumers. Tariffs explained part of the explosion in durable goods inflation during the past year. Consumer prices for durable goods fell steadily between 1995 and 2020, mainly due to lower costs for electronics. The Consumer Price Index, the CPI, for durables fell by 25% between 1997 and 2020, before rebounding by 15% since the COVID-19 lockdown. Falling prices for U.S. imports from China had a big impact on the prices Americans paid for durable goods. According to a Vox Data for Progress poll released on 3rd of August, inflation is the most pressing economic issue for American voters. The United States now imports about $550 billion a year from China, or almost a quarter of America's manufacturing output of $2.4 trillion on a GDP basis. Tariffs of 20% apply to about half of Chinese imports, so by simple arithmetic, the elimination of tariffs should reduce the cost of durable goods in the United States by a bit over 2%. Renmin University professor Jin Kan Rong, a prominent Chinese academic closely followed in Washington, argued recently that inflation could bankrupt the U.S. federal government by boosting the cost of interest on the federal debt. He added that the U.S. needs China's supply chains to keep inflation under control. China's state-controlled English-language newspaper Global Times commented on 6th of August, U.S. high tariff policy is against the trend of the times and will not hold for long. Chinese companies have generally adapted to the new situation, while the U.S. is suffering more from the tariffs than China. This has gradually become a consensus in U.S. public opinion, and this has given China better conditions to maintain its strategic focus. In fact, it is also an increasingly clearer manifestation of China's comprehensive strength. Meanwhile, an increasing number of American strategists have concluded that former U.S. President Donald Trump failed to slow China by cutting off access to high-end semiconductors made with U.S. technology. Asia Times recently was the first to report that China had the semiconductor capacity to work around American sanctions for critical applications, such as 5G network build-out, and that China was moving rapidly to exploit fifth-generation in a wide range of industries. China will build nearly a million fifth-generation 5G base stations this year, vastly outpacing the rest of the world combined. Moreover, Chinese industry sources report that tens of thousands of dedicated fifth-generation networks for factories, ports, warehouses, mines, and urban transportation systems will be installed in the course of the next year. In a July 2021 report on China's semiconductor industry, the U.S. Semiconductor Industry Association wrote, "Just recently, China sent astronauts into space to board a new space station. Earlier this year, China landed a rover on Mars." Chinese state media reported that inside both China's space station and the Mars rover were 100% indigenously designed and produced semiconductors, signaling China's increasingly sophisticated microchip capabilities. Nevertheless, while China has mastered some chip technologies, its commercial semiconductor industry is still relatively nascent. Still, the Chinese government is making serious efforts to close the gap, investing well over $150 billion from 2014 through to 2030 in semiconductors. Buoyed by a booming market and these government investments, China is poised to be increasingly competitive in some semiconductor market segments. In a 4th of August commentary for Project Syndicate, Harvard professor Graham Allison and former Google chief executive officer Eric Schmidt warned, "Most Americans assume that their country's lead in advanced technologies is unassailable, and many in the U.S. national security community insist that China can never be more than a near-peer competitor in artificial intelligence. In fact, China is already a full-spectrum peer competitor in terms of both commercial and national security artificial intelligence applications. China is not just trying to master artificial intelligence, it is mastering artificial intelligence. The pandemic has offered a revealing early test of each country's ability to mobilize artificial intelligence at scale in response to a national security threat." In the United States, President Donald Trump's administration claims that it deployed cutting-edge technology as part of its declared war on the coronavirus. But for the most part, artificial intelligence-related technologies have been used mainly as buzzwords. Not so in China. To stop the spread of the virus, China locked down the entire population of Hubei province, 60 million people. That is more than the number of residents in every state of U.S. East Coast, from Florida to Maine. China maintained this massive cordon sanitaire by using artificial intelligence-enhanced algorithms to track residents' movements and scale up testing capabilities while massive new healthcare facilities were being built. Asia Times broke the story of China's use of artificial intelligence for pandemic control on 3rd of March 2020. China suppressed COVID-19 with artificial intelligence and big data. The Trump technology sanctions haven't slowed down China. On the contrary, as Allison and Schmidt aver, China is gaining on the U.S. and in some fields has overtaken it. Both for economic and strategic reasons, the Biden administration is likely to give Trump's failed China policy a decent burial and move on.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Imam Khomeini guided the Iranian nation to determine their own fate. June 4, 2021. The televised speech delivered on June 4, 2021 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on the 32nd demise anniversary of Imam Khomeini. Greetings be upon him. The kind of Islam that Imam wanted. From the viewpoint of Imam, Islam is a system that seeks justice and that it is opposed to arrogance and corruption. These are clear in the statements of Imam. These statements can be found both in his testament and in the 20 plus volumes on Imam's statements, both of which have been published. Of course, we ourselves heard these viewpoints directly from Imam, but those who were not born then and who did not see Imam could refer to his statements. The context of Imam's statements is clear. The kind of Islam that Imam believes in is anti-arrogance, that is, anti-American. It is against the domination and interference of foreigners and foreign powers, interference in the domestic affairs of the country. It is against kneeling before the enemy. It is an anti-corruption Islam. The kind of Islam that Imam believes in is anti-corruption and is opposed to giving privileges to certain individuals. The things that are revealed in the area of corruption in some sectors today are definitely the opposite of what Islam wants. Islam is a religion that fights against corruption. An Islamic government is a government that combats corruption. Such a government is also anti-reactionary. Reactionary meaning contaminating life with old regressive thoughts and drifting away from new Islamic thoughts, those of our magnanimous Imam. Islam is hostile to aristocracy and advocates the underprivileged. Islam does not favor class inequalities, the gap between the poor and the rich. Late in his blessed life, a few months before his demise, Imam writes a letter to an official saying, "You should show that our people rose up against oppression, chaos, reactionary attitude, and retro-regressive ideas, and that they replaced a monarchic, capitalist, eclectic, and in some, an American Islam with an original Islam introduced by Muhammad."
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.